the most impactful stories are the ones we don't immediately know. They're sort of quietly shaping history behind the scenes. Today, we're taking a deep dive into just such a life. Dorothy Jensen Blanchard. Her remarkable journey, I mean, from a small New Jersey town right up to the highest levels of U.S. military intelligence. It offers a truly unique perspective, a lens into these pivotal moments in American history, showing that quiet, enduring power of, well, individual dedication.
Right. And for this deep dive, we're drawing from quite a rich collection of sources. We've got personal recollections from her son-in-law, which are fascinating. There's a tribute from the city of Albuquerque highlighting her local impact there, and a wonderful article celebrating her as a living legend. So this material, it really paints a vibrant picture of a life well lived.
Yeah, it sounds like we have a lot to work with. So our mission today is to pull out the most compelling nuggets of knowledge, the insights from Dorothy's long, impactful life. We want to understand not just what she did, but, you know, why her contributions still resonate so powerfully today. Okay, let's unpack this. So let's set the scene. It's 1943. Dorothy's living in Milltown, New Jersey, a small town, right? Life pretty much revolved around church and family. The Great Depression had really hammered home the importance of those two things. Then one warm August morning, she boards a train destination, New York City. She remembered seeing those inspiring posters, "Join the waves, your country needs you now." So she is becoming part of this new, larger family, the armed services.
Exactly. And what's fascinating here is just the sheer grit and determination these women had. It really pushed them through some demanding training. When Dorothy got to Hunter College in the Bronx for WAYS training, that's Women Accepted for Volunteer Emergency Service, it wasn't exactly glamorous. It was basically a student dorm, hastily converted. Maybe 20 nervous applicants crammed in. Forget the posters. This was bunk beds, stripped muster at the crack of dawn. Beds had to be made so tight you could bounce a coin off them. Surprise inspections, marching, even spud locker duty.
Spud locker duty? What's that?
Yeah, well, it often meant hours peeling potatoes or cleaning out storage areas, grueling stuff. This whole intense environment, it was too much for some. They dropped out. But not Dorothy. When she decided to do something, apparently there was no turning back. Just the kind of resolute person the military needed during the war. You know?
Absolutely. And her performance, it really stood out, didn't it? Within just a few weeks, she completed her training in the top one percentile, didn't even need further instruction. That just speaks volumes about her capabilities right from the start.
It really does. And that exceptional performance didn't go unnoticed. It was only fitting then that First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, who was instrumental in creating the WAYS program itself, actually graced Dorothy's platoon with a graduation salute. Pretty amazing.
Wow. So training complete, Dorothy moves right into this crucial wartime role, reporting for duty at the Merchant Shipping Intelligence Office. Can you picture it? A large wall map showing every Allied merchant ship out there. Her job was tracking them, routing them along these safe conduct routes in the Atlantic, trying to protect them from, well, enemy submarines, high stakes. Okay, so from tracking ships. Then she gets appointed private secretary to Admiral Arleigh A. Broke. That's a huge leap, right? A rapid ascent. What made her stand out for such a critical, high-level role? Handling top-secret documents and all that? Okay, here's where it gets really interesting.
Well, Admiral Burke, he was famously nicknamed 31 Knot Burke, known for his aggressive, high-speed naval tactics, a real driving force. And Dorothy's responsibilities were immense, handling all official naval correspondence, including, yes, top-secret documents, that wartime motto, "Loose lips sink ships." She took it to heart, lived it every single day.
So she's right there in the thick of it.
Absolutely. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, her position gave her this incredible firsthand view, a view of a legislative and military transformation that is honestly probably the most consequential in our nation's history. You see, Dorothy's work put her right there when the National Security Act of 1947 passed and when the U.S. Air Force was created.
Oh, that was a huge reorganization.
Huge. And it was a painful birth, as some called it, taking elements from the Navy's aircraft carriers, the Army Air Corps. Lots of intense inter-service rivalries, strategic debates. Her being so close meant she witnessed that whole transition, not from afar, but from the ground level, where the paperwork, the decisions were actually being made. It really shows how history isn't just made by the big names. It's built on the meticulous, often unsung efforts of individuals like Dorothy doing that foundational work.
It sounds like working with Admiral Burke really opened her eyes. She started to realize maybe that there were fewer limits on what she could achieve compared to, say, her mother's generation, Anna Genevieve Jensen. It wasn't just about her own path, her dedication in that male-dominated world.
It sends a message, right? It showed what women were capable of, not through talk, but just by being undeniably competent. quietly changing perceptions.
Exactly. She was blazing a trail without even necessarily trying to, just by doing her job exceptionally well. And her influence just kept expanding. 1949, President Truman names John F. Floberg as Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Air. And Dorothy quickly becomes his administrative right hand.
Right. And here's a surprising detail, a little bit of foreshadowing, perhaps. Secretary Floberg had actually graduated from the U.S. Armed Forces Training Center in Atomic Weapons, which was at Sandia in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Now, little did Dorothy know then, but much later in her life, where would she end up living? Albuquerque, not far from Kirtland. It's kind of a fascinating full circle moment in her story.
That is interesting. And with Secretary Floberg, her role became truly international, editing speeches, touring naval installations all over the globe. Tunisia, Bermuda, Morocco, Scotland, France, Newfoundland, Iceland, the Azores, England. I mean, she was really seeing the world, helping shape naval policy firsthand. Sounds like quite an adventure.
Definitely a long way from Middletown, New Jersey.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit to a more personal, maybe fateful moment. Valentine's Day, 1950. It's raining in Washington, D.C. Dorothy's waiting at a bus stop, wearing her military-issue raincoat. Then these two sailors pull up in this distinctive car, described as a turtle-like Nash. They ask if she needs a ride. Now, normally, she'd never accept a ride from strangers, but they were Navy men. She trusted that Navy family, as she put it, so she got in.
And that simple decision, that small moment of trust, it turned out to be incredibly significant.
Hmm.
It's really quite remarkable how that, well, seemingly ordinary encounter kicked off this deep, lifelong connection. One of those sailors was a rather shy aerographer named Earl Harrison Blanchard, known as Doc.
Mm-hmm.
He was quietly captivated by her. It actually took him 6 months of persistence, and he used to joke using his naval intelligence just to track her down again.
6 months. He must have been determined.
He was. And a little over a year after they first met, Dorothy Josephine Jensen and Earl Harrison Blanchard got married. It was a simple ceremony. You know the saying, the length of a marriage is inversely proportional to the wedding cost. Well, Dot and Doc, they were married for life.
That's a lovely story.
Yeah.
Then, 1952, another milestone. Their daughter, Linda, was born at the Naval Hospital in Bethesda, Maryland. And apparently, in an adjoining room, Hollywood legend Shirley Temple's son was born around the same time.
Huh. Small world.
Right. And it was customary then for women to leave the Navy after giving birth, so Dorothy did. But as the saying goes, you can take the gal out of the Navy, but you can't take the Navy out of the gal.
That's absolutely right. Her connection stayed strong, mostly through her husband's naval tours of duty. First London, then Hawaii. After their military service wrapped up, Doc and Dot settled in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Doc went to college on the GI Bill, and Dorothy, well, she got a job at the University of North Carolina. Even out of uniform, you see that commitment, that organization she honed in the Navy, finding a new purpose. It sort of underscores a different kind of pioneering, doesn't it? How those service values translate into civilian life, shaping institutions from within.
Yeah, absolutely. And her pride in the Navy, it just never faded. She'd often point out, apparently, that the USS Arleigh Burke, the destroyer named after her old boss, her mentor, fired some of the first cruise missiles against ISIS strongholds years later. Her identity was so tied to it, even late in life, getting calls from the VA or U.S. area.
That's the financial group for military families.
Right, or NFCU, the Navy Federal Credit Union. The customer service rep would ask, "Is this Chief Blanchard?" And apparently a smile would just spread across her face. It really shows the Navy was just stamped all over her heart, a rose in her bouquet of memories, as one source put it. Do you think that kind of deep connection to service is, like, unique to that generation, or do we still see that today?
That's a really good question.
Hmm.
I mean, the circumstances were definitely unique for the greatest generation.
Hmm.
Their values aligned so perfectly with that call from President Kennedy, you know, ask not what your country can do for you.
Hmm.
But I do think that deep sense of service, that identity, it's something that still resonates really powerfully for many veterans today. It shapes them. Dorothy herself had this poignant saying, it really captures her spirit. God gives us memories, so we have roses in December.
Roses in December. That's beautiful. Okay, let's fast forward. March 2023. Dorothy celebrates her 100th birthday. Big celebration. She received the Living Legend Award from the Military Women's Memorial. The Albuquerque Journal even ran a front page article. Headline was, Cake with a Scoop of Military Honors.
Yeah, the 100th birthday celebration sounds amazing. It was filled with these powerful mementos from her career. There was that picture of Eleanor Roosevelt saluting her graduating class. Another item highlighted her critical role at the Merchant Shipping Intelligence Office. There was also this notable photograph of Fleet Admiral Nimitz, but with a personal note. Dorothy, autographed with pen that signed Japanese surrender.
Wow. The pen that signed the surrender.
The very pen. And there was correspondence about the National Security Act of 1947. It really makes you think, doesn't it? How many other individuals like Dorothy were that close to history-making moments? Providing that crucial groundwork without becoming household names themselves, it really highlights those unsung heroes.
Definitely. And her story is also being captured for future generations, which is great. There's a documentary by filmmaker Katrina Parks, Route 66, The Untold Story of Women on the Mother Road. It came out early 2024, and it features Dorothy on film talking about the waves in Albuquerque. It's being broadcast on PBS stations, so you should definitely keep an eye out for that one. Sadly, Dorothy passed away on June 20th, 2024. At the remarkable age of 101, her military funeral, July 1st, 2024, at the Santa Fe National Cemetery, it sounds like it was a truly moving tribute. Sailors in uniform saluting, an honor guard, color guard, a rifle party firing three volleys, a Navy bugler playing taps, and the American flag that covered her casket was folded and presented to her daughter, Linda. The Navy bid her farewell with those traditional words, "May you have fair winds and following seas."
A fitting farewell. And her legacy, it's deeply connected to Albuquerque now. She lived there for her last 25 years. And the city of Albuquerque has approved renaming High Desert Park as Dorothy Jensen Blanchard High Desert Park. It's a way to acknowledge her deep connection to the city and to Kirtland Air Force Base, especially through her pivotal work related to the National Security Act and the creation of the Air Force, which in turn led to Kirtland becoming an Air Force base. It's a really fitting permanent tribute.
It really is. So Dorothy Jensen Blanchard's incredible journey from a small town girl answering her country's call to a high-level military assistant, a pioneer for women, and, well, a beloved matriarch. Her life wasn't just part of history, it actively shaped it, often in these quiet yet really profound ways.
Absolutely. Dorothy Jensen Blanchard's story is just a profound reminder. A reminder that the threads of our nation's history aren't just woven by grand figures and sweeping events. They're woven by the quiet diligence, the personal sacrifices, the unwavering spirit of individuals like her. She truly embodied what it means to be part of the greatest generation.
So here's something to think about as you move through your day. Consider the unsung heroes, the people whose contributions laid the groundwork for the world you live in now. What overlooked stories, what quiet acts of service are shaping the fabric of our present in ways we might not even realize.